cardiovascular fitness, which in turn will increase your metabolism. Remember that cardiovascular fitness refers to the ability of your heart, lungs, and arteries to deliver oxygen, which is carried in the blood, to working muscles, and your muscles' ability to use that oxygen to perform work over a particular period of time. By increasing your level of cardiovascular fitness, you are increasing the rate that your body can burn calories. I can't stress enough how important this is. Increasing your cardiovascular fitness will have an immediate and significant impact on your metabolism and therefore your weight loss results. Increasing your metabolism is essential for creating the dramatic changes that will take place to your body. It will be a primary reason that you will maintain a lower percentage of body fat. Now let's talk about selecting an aerobic exercise. When you train your cardiovascular system using aerobic exercise, there are five essentials you should follow. 1. Select primarily aerobic exercises to perform. We'll look at the best aerobic choices shortly. 2. Perform your aerobic exercises continuously and for enough duration to get cardiovascular improvement. 3. Perform your aerobic exercises for enough total minutes each week to get cardiovascular improvement. 4. Perform your aerobic exercises at an intensity that improves your cardiovascular system. And 5. Progress the amount of time you perform aerobic exercise each week to continue getting both cardiovascular improvement and weight loss results. Now here's my A list of the most effective aerobic exercises. 1. Power walking. 2. Jogging. 3. Aerobic dance. 4. Stair climbing. These four aerobic exercises represent the best choices to satisfy your weekly aerobic exercise program because they are not only highly aerobic, but they also are relatively easy to build into your life. Power walking is my favorite overall aerobic exercise, and it's the one most people should start with. The chances of injuring yourself are quite low. It's extremely convenient, and it can be highly aerobic when performed properly. The majority of my clients power walk for at least some of their weekly exercise. If you want this exercise to count toward your weekly quota of exercise minutes, you'll want to be sure that you are power walking and not just walking. There is a distinct difference between the two. To properly perform the technique of power walking, you need to use good posture. Keep your chin up and look straight out in front of you. Be sure your shoulders are pulled up and back. Keep your arms bent at a 90-degree angle and swing them with your fists coming up to shoulder level before swinging them back down. If you power walk consistently, your pace should get faster the more you do it. This is a sign your cardiovascular system is getting stronger and your metabolism is revving up. I'll tell you a secret. As your pace gets faster, your percentage of body fat is decreasing. The next choice, jogging. Jogging is a highly aerobic activity that can produce quick weight loss results. It's also quite convenient to perform. However, jogging is a high-impact exercise and carries the risk of a variety of overuse injuries. Jogging may not be your best choice if you have high blood pressure or heart problems, are quite overweight, smoke cigarettes, or have any other medical condition that would be aggravated with such a vigorous activity. Your physician can help you decide if jogging is right for you. Aerobic dance can provide a fun way to accomplish your weekly exercise minutes. There's such a variety of classes these days that it's hard to get bored with this activity. Remember that aerobic boxing and aerobic martial arts are considered to be in this category of exercise. Keep in mind that there are high and low impact aerobics. I recommend the low impact variety. You'll have much less risk of overuse and impact injuries. Luckily, these days, most classes are the low impact type. It's also best to attend a class taught by a knowledgeable instructor, preferably one certified by either the American Council on Exercise or the Aerobics and Fitness Association of America. My final A-list choice is stair climbing. Stair climbing is actually a slightly different exercise than stair stepping, another popular exercise. Stair climbing is performed on actual stairs, such as those that may be found in your home or at a stadium. Climbing actual stairs is fully weight-supporting and is more aerobic than stair-stepping on a machine. This is a great aerobic activity. However, you may have to build up to being able to perform it continuously for a minimum of 10 minutes. simply walk up the stairs to the top, and then walk back down. Since going up is much more strenuous than going down, you should maintain the proper intensity by going down the stairs more quickly than you go up. These are by no means the only aerobic exercise possibilities. There are many more ways to approach aerobic conditioning, but for most people, these four offer ready access to the benefits of aerobic conditioning. That's why they're my personal favorites. So, how long should you do these exercises? In order for exercise to make the necessary increases to your metabolism, it needs to be performed continuously for about 10 minutes. 15 minutes would be even better, but I'll take 10. This provides the necessary stimulus for your cells to say, "Hey, we need to make some changes." Don't count any exercise that is not continuously performed for at least 10 minutes. In phase 2, you'll be aerobically exercising a minimum of 50 minutes a week. If you can do more, great. These 50 minutes should be spread throughout the week, meaning you should exercise on at least 3 different days and never allow more than 2 days to pass without getting some exercise in any given week. Finally, remember that you must exercise for at least 10 minutes continuously for the time to count towards your weekly quota of minutes. Your weekly aerobic minutes will be a key factor in your weight loss results. When you reach a plateau in your results, simply increase the amount of weekly aerobic minutes that you perform, or, if you're ready, move on to the next phase, or do both. One of your goals in phase 2 is to progress your weekly aerobic minutes to 75, assuming you want further results and you plan on moving to phase 3. Now, for a critically important question. How hard should you exercise? Without a doubt, how hard you exercise, or the intensity of your exercise, is the most important component of your aerobic workout and one of the most important aspects of the entire weight loss process. The bottom line is that the more aerobic work you are able to perform within a given amount of time, the better cardiovascular shape you'll be in. And the better cardiovascular shape you're in, the lower the amount of body fat that you will maintain. In other words, I want you to exercise at the highest intensity that is safe for you and that you can maintain for your entire workout. You do this by exercising in the zone. What exactly is the zone? The zone is the intensity of exercise that safely produces the results that you want. If you exercise below the zone, you risk not getting results. If you exercise above the zone, you risk not being able to continue your exercise, or worse, you risk injury. The zone is the perfect intensity level at which to perform your cardiovascular exercise, between 70 and 80% of your maximum ability. How do you know when you're in the zone? There are essentially 2 ways: taking your heart rate and monitoring your level of perceived exertion. Either way is acceptable. If you're accustomed to using your target heart rate to monitor your exercise and you're comfortable using this method, by all means continue to do so. Also, if you have any medical condition that would be aggravated if you went above a certain heart rate, you'll need to keep track of exactly what your heart rate is when you exercise. Your physician can prescribe a training heart rate for you, and you may want to use a heart rate monitor to assure that you don't exceed your limit. But for most people, I prefer perceived exertion, a method that requires you to pay close attention to your body and what's happening to it. Perceived exertion is a subjective rating of how hard you're working during exercise that is based primarily on your breathing. Your breathing becomes elevated in direct response to your oxygen requirements and gives you immediate feedback about the intensity of your exercise. In addition, you don't have to stop exercising to take a reading. You simply evaluate how hard you're working based primarily on how short of breath you are, using a scale from 0 to 10. Your optimum zone is anywhere between a rating of 7 and 8. I want you to exercise consistently at level 7 when you first start out. Later, you can stay at 7 or move up to working at level 8, if and when you're ready. Now, let's review the scale. Be sure to fully understand how you should feel at levels 7 and 8, which is where you'll be exercising most of the time. Begin by picturing a scale from 0 to 10. Here's what you should be feeling at each level. Level 0. This is the feeling you should experience at rest. There is no feeling of fatigue. Your breathing is not at all elevated, You will not experience this level during exercise. Level 1. This is the feeling you would experience while working at your desk or reading. There's no feeling of fatigue. Your breathing is not elevated. Level 2. This is the feeling you would experience while getting dressed. There is little or no feeling of fatigue. Your breathing is not elevated. You will rarely experience this low level during exercise. Level 3. This is the feeling you would experience while slowly walking across the room to turn on the television. There is little feeling of fatigue. You may be slightly aware of your breathing, but it is slow and natural. You may experience this right in the beginning of an exercise session. Level 4. This is the feeling you would experience while slowly walking outside. There is a slight feeling of fatigue. Your breathing is slightly elevated, but comfortable. You should experience this level during the initial stages of your warm-up. Level 5. This is the feeling you would experience while walking to the store. There is a slight feeling of fatigue. You are aware of your breathing, which is deeper than that of level 4. You should experience this level at the end of your warm-up. Level 6. This is the feeling you would experience when you are walking somewhere and are very late for an appointment. There is a general feeling of fatigue, but you know that you can maintain this level of exertion. Your breathing is deep, and you are aware of it. You should experience this level in the transition from your warm-up to your exercise session and during the initial phase of learning how to work at a level 7 or 8. Level 7. This is the feeling you would experience when you are exercising vigorously. There is a definite feeling of fatigue, but you are quite sure you can maintain this level for the rest of your exercise session. Your breathing is deep, and you are definitely aware of it. You could carry on a conversation, but you would probably choose not to do so. This is the baseline level of exercise that you should maintain in your workout sessions. Level 8. This is the feeling you would experience when you are exercising very vigorously. There is a definite feeling of fatigue, and if you asked yourself if you could continue for the remainder of your exercise session, your answer would be that you think you could, but you're not 100% sure. Your breathing is very deep. You could still carry on a conversation, but you don't feel like it. This becomes the feeling you should experience only after you are comfortable reaching level 7 and are ready for a more intense workout. This is the level that produces rapid results for many people. Level 9. This is the feeling that you would experience if you were exercising very, very vigorously. You would experience a definite feeling of fatigue, and if you asked yourself if you could continue this pace for the remainder of your exercise session, your answer would be you probably could not. Your breathing is very labored. It would be very difficult to carry on a conversation. This is a feeling you may experience for short periods when trying to zero in on level 8. This is a level that many athletes train at, and it's difficult for them. You should not be experiencing level 9 on a routine basis, and should slow up when you do. Level 10. You should not experience level 10. This is a feeling you would experience with all-out exercise. This level cannot be maintained for very long, and there's no benefit in reaching it. Take the time to learn each level. Remember that you're striving to reach and maintain level 7 when you first begin exercising. Later, once you are more highly trained, you can reach level 8 during part or all of your exercise session. I urge you not to make the mistake that many people do, which is to believe that once they have their routine down, all they need to do is show up and punch the exercise time clock. Exercise needs to be increased in duration and intensity if results are going to continue. In that way, you not only accomplish more work and become stronger, you also adjust your goals and set new ones for yourself. Your progress helps you define where you want to go and how quickly you want to get there. But before you decide how aggressively to move through the 4 phases of Get With The Program, I want you to fully understand how your body changes and your fitness improves. Once you begin aerobic training on a regular basis, you will begin to experience improvements rather quickly in the amount of work you can perform and in your cardiovascular function. Why? Let's take a look at your first workout. Let's say that you're power walking at level 7. Your muscles, primarily your leg muscles, will need more oxygen than normal to perform this new level of exertion. so the muscles involved will send out signals to your brain that they need more oxygen. Your brain then sends a message to your lungs to breathe harder, putting more oxygen in the blood, and to your heart to beat faster, to move more blood. Since you're functioning at a higher aerobic level than your body normally is accustomed to, the working muscles probably don't have an adequate amount of aerobic enzymes to process all this additional oxygen. So, to continue walking at level 7, you must provide energy anaerobically, or without oxygen, using a series of complex chemical reactions that occur within your muscles. The reactions lead to the production of lactic acid, which in turn makes you want to slow down or stop exercising. It also makes you sore in a day or two. The bottom line is that you didn't have enough aerobic enzymes to adequately perform the exercise at the level that you were pushing yourself at. In addition, your heart and lungs were not strong enough to deliver an ample supply of blood to the muscles. Is this a problem? No. This is exactly what happens whenever you're trying to reach a higher level of fitness. This is what training is all about. What you are doing during an aerobic workout is modestly starving your body for oxygen. This sends the message to your heart that it must become stronger, the message to your lungs that they must get stronger, and the message to your muscles that they need to manufacture more aerobic enzymes so that they can process more oxygen. Your body responds by strengthening all of these systems, but these results are contingent upon depriving, only slightly, the body of oxygen while exercising. To continue to improve, you must continue to aerobically challenge your body on a regular basis. Keep in mind that all these changes take time to occur. The amount of time differs depending on the individual, but they always occur. You simply must be patient and persistent. Your progression is built into each phase of Get With The Program, but it's up to you to move yourself through those phases within your own time frame. Now that you know all that you need to know about aerobic exercise, I want you to learn the importance of limiting your consumption of alcohol, the second goal of Phase 2. Consuming alcohol has a few strikes against it when it comes to your body weight and your well-being. Alcohol's first problem is that it has a lot of calories, almost as many calories as pure fat. And when it comes to gaining weight, drinking alcohol is even worse than eating pure fat. Fat has nutrients that you need. Alcohol doesn't. Alcohol is absorbed immediately from the stomach and dumped right into the bloodstream. From there, it can be quickly converted to body fat. Since it doesn't occupy any space in your stomach, you can drink it and then immediately fill up on foods to double the damage. But probably the worst effect of alcohol, as far as your weight is concerned, is that it slows down your metabolism. This effect can linger for days, changing the rate at which you burn calories. If that's not bad enough, alcohol consumption can have negative, motivational effects as well. It can dampen your enthusiasm for eating the right foods, and it certainly doesn't make you feel like having strong workouts. All told, alcohol derails your weight loss efforts in direct proportion to how much you consume. So my advice? Eliminate it if you can. If you're not willing to go that far, then at least cut your consumption in half. This will dramatically help your weight loss efforts. I've found that even the most die-hard connoisseurs have been able to successfully cut alcohol consumption in half and still appreciate the drinks they do have, maybe even to a greater extent. Isn't it really the first glass of wine that tastes the best anyway? Just stop to ask yourself after the first drink if subsequent drinks are really worth the damage. By now, you should have a good idea of what's expected of you in Phase 2. Just to be sure, let's review the Phase 2 requirements. 1. Water, 7 glasses each day. 2. Functional exercises, 1 set of 15, 4 times per week. 3. Weekly aerobic minutes, a minimum of 50 minutes per week, increasing to 75 minutes as you prepare for Phase 3. 4. Limit your consumption of alcohol. 5. Recommended time at Phase 2, 1 to 3 months. Once you've met all the requirements for Phase 2 for at least 4 consecutive weeks, and you feel confident that you understand all the goals and requirements of Phase 2, and you've either not begun to lose weight or you've lost weight and reached a real plateau, then it's time for Phase 3. Welcome to Phase 3, getting real about emotional eating. If there is a secret to the mystery of permanent weight loss, it is the complete elimination of what I call emotional eating. If you are like the majority of people who want to lose weight, you almost certainly have struggled long and hard with this issue. Emotional overeating is an epidemic in this country. If you feel you are among this majority, take heart. In phase 3, I'm going to teach you how to regain control over your eating habits and take responsibility once and for all for your weight, health, and well-being by coming to grips with the grip of emotional eating. Here are the goals for phase 3. 1. Begin to understand the causes of and eliminate your emotional eating. 2. Drink a minimum of 8 glasses of water each day. 3. Increase your functional exercises to 2 sets of each exercise 5 times a week. 4. Increase your aerobic exercise to a minimum of 100 minutes per week. 5. If you want to progress, increase your aerobic exercise to 125 minutes per week as you prepare for phase 4. 6. Maintain your exercise log. Let's start with a simple definition. What exactly is emotional eating? Anytime you eat because of something you are feeling, other than physical hunger, it is referred to as emotional eating. This type of eating can occur at any time, at meals, in between meals, at social occasions, or late at night. For many people, emotional eating is the primary reason they've gained weight in the first place. Are you an emotional eater? Ask yourself these questions. Do you eat to comfort yourself in stressful situations? Do you eat due to boredom and/or loneliness? Do you eat due to problems or turmoil in your life? Do you eat due to something or someone missing in your life? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then emotional eating affects you. Eliminating all or most of your emotional eating is an essential component to getting with the program. By eliminating emotional eating, you will not only achieve true weight loss success, but will also be giving yourself a life filled with more health and fulfillment than you could ever imagine. But keep in mind that it has taken you a lifetime to weave the threads of overeating into your life, so it will take more than a little time to unravel them as well. Creating positive change in your life can take hard work, painful soul-searching, patience, perseverance, and time. I want you to first understand that emotional eating is a coping mechanism. Just as a baby soothes herself by sucking her thumb, or a child clings to his raggedy security blanket for emotional self-comfort, emotional eating also has similarities to workaholism and other forms of addiction, in which negative behaviors help to numb people from the stresses and strains of their lives. If emotional overeating is your coping mechanism of choice, you will need to be especially gentle with yourself as you go about the process of eliminating this behavior from your life. For unlike those who suffer from other self-destructive habits, the emotional overeater has an even harder row to hoe because food is an essential part of our lives. You need food to live. Let's take a look at the typical American way of eating. Most people skip breakfast, eat a moderate to large lunch on the fly, snack whenever they feel the urge, eat a very large dinner, eat while watching television in the evening, then cap it all off with a late-night snack. This is the perfect prescription for gaining weight. Most of the calories eaten this way are consumed at the end of the day. Why is this a problem? Calories eaten earlier in the day can raise your metabolism and your energy level to a much greater extent. Foods eaten late in the day are usually more calorie dense, and you're likely to eat more. Instead of being used, these calories are more likely to be stored as fat. Organizing your meals will help you tremendously in identifying any emotional eating. Organize your meals by eating a healthy breakfast. Eat a moderate lunch. Have a snack in between lunch and dinner. Eat a moderate dinner. Eat a second snack only if you're physically hungry. Stop eating completely at least 2 hours before bedtime. By eating this newly conscious way, your consumption of calories will be distributed throughout the day, maximizing your energy level and your metabolism. You will also prevent what is known as an insulin response, which occurs when you eat too many calories at any one sitting. When you eat one particularly large meal, your body secretes an unusually high amount of insulin. Insulin's job is to take blood glucose out of the bloodstream and deposit it as body fat. When you want to lose weight, this is exactly what you don't want to happen. Many people are under the impression that by skipping breakfast and saving those calories for lunch, they are speeding up their weight loss. The opposite is true. So it all starts with breakfast. If you're not accustomed to eating breakfast, you'll need to train yourself to eat this most important meal. When you first start to eat breakfast, you probably won't be hungry for it. This will change as you become accustomed to moving more of the calories that you eat to earlier in the day. Eating breakfast will result in eating less at night and waking up hungrier than you're accustomed to being. This might take a week or a month to occur, but when it happens, it's a very good sign. Once you've gotten into the habit of eating breakfast, your snacks will become an important technique for bridging your hunger in between meals and should help you from overindulging at any one meal. Snacks should be kept anywhere from 75 to 150 calories. Again, I can't stress enough how important it is to stop eating at least 2 hours before bedtime. Late-night calories do the most damage because your metabolism is slow. That slight craving for something late in the evening is your body warning you that if you don't feed it, it's going to dip into your fat stores for some energy. Let it. Just go to sleep wanting a little something and let the feeling pass. Just remember, when your day is done and most of the stresses of life are behind you is when you're the most prone to emotional eating. This is when food can best distract you from feeling something that you were meant to feel. Don't give in. Use this critical moment to create a better life for yourself. Now let's explore the difference between physical hunger and emotional eating. Learning to distinguish when physical hunger ends and emotional eating begins is an essential thing you need to do to identify your emotional eating issues and patterns. If you deal with your emotions by using food, you may have actually lost the ability to feel your physical hunger. In order to feel physical hunger, you must allow yourself to become hungry. That's where getting with the program can really help. Just by being more active physically, as you have been doing in phases 1 and 2, you will enhance your ability to become physically hungry. Now the challenge will be for you to delay your eating past your normally scheduled mealtime in order for you to experience the actual physical sensation of hunger. If you have a medical condition, such as diabetes, you should consult your physician. Another technique that I recommend to help you learn the difference between physical hunger and emotional hunger is to keep a journal of the times that you eat excessively or outside your established meals and snacks. Ask yourself why you're eating. Then simply write about what you're feeling instead of eating. Include anything that you believe contributes to your feelings of hunger and the situation surrounding them. Journaling will help you begin to uncover patterns and situations that are associated with your emotional eating and the source of the feelings that contribute to your behavior. Once you begin to identify your emotional eating triggers and to experience physical hunger on a regular basis, that real hunger will dictate when and how much you should eat. Believe me, eating because of sheer physical hunger is a wonderful experience, especially if you're not used to it. Eating will become an event to be celebrated and savored, not a guilty indulgence. Food will free you to be the best you can be, instead of literally weighing you down. As you work toward eliminating emotional eating from your life, you will undoubtedly fall prey to the occasional bout of emotional eating. When you do, try to make sensible snack choices when you head for the kitchen. Make a list of substitutions. Instead of fudge, have fruit. Instead of ice cream, eat some yogurt. Have unsalted popcorn instead of potato chips. Graham crackers instead of chocolate chip cookies. You get the picture. Now let me say a few things about beginning the hard work of changing your behavior. Maybe you've been under the impression that the hard work in the process of improving your health and well-being is in exercising consistently or giving up your favorite unhealthy foods. While these things may be hard at first, they're simply things that need to be done. The real hard work, though, is taking a clear-eyed and objective look at your life and finding the courage to make permanent changes to behaviors that you've probably defended for most of your life. This is what makes permanent change possible and so powerful. Here are some new words to live by. Stop comforting yourself by stuffing down your feelings of sadness, regret, fear, and frustration with cheeseburgers, pizza, pie, and potato chips. Stop comforting yourself by numbing yourself from the everyday stresses of work and family life by falling prey to obsessive-compulsive snacking. Stop comforting yourself by fooling yourself that you can fill a void in your personal or professional life simply with food. Eliminating emotional eating requires discipline, patience, and a serious commitment to improving your life. And that's the best part about overcoming it. You're invariably forced to take a look at your life in its entirety and make improvements to it that you may not have thought of or have been previously unwilling to make. Acknowledging that you are emotionally driven to overindulge in food is half the battle of gaining control over your weight, health, and well-being. It's not an easy war to win, but the choice to change is yours, and that choice is a powerful weapon. When all's said and done, it comes down to what you really want and your ability to impose your will. Now, once more, let's review the goals for Phase 3. 1. Begin to understand the causes of and eliminate your emotional eating. 2. Drink a minimum of 8 glasses of water each day. 3. Increase your functional exercises to 2 sets of each exercise 5 times per week. 4. Increase your aerobic exercise to a minimum of 100 minutes per week. 5. If you want to progress, increase your aerobic exercise to 125 minutes per week as you prepare for Phase 4. 6. Maintain your exercise log. Once you've organized your eating into 3 meals and 2 snacks, once you've stopped eating at least 2 hours before you go to bed, once you've created a journal of eating that you keep with you and update daily, and once you've truly prepared yourself for the hard work of looking at and changing your behavior, then, congratulations, you're ready for Phase 4. Welcome to Phase 4, securing a life of health and emotional well-being. Congratulations on reaching Phase 4, the final phase of Get With The Program. This phase is all about getting strong, fine-tuning your eating habits, and preparing yourself to be active and healthy for the rest of your life. In this phase, you're going to drink at least 9 glasses of water each day. You're going to continue with your stretching exercises, just as you did in phases 1, 2, and 3. But for the rest of the functional exercises, instead of doing 2 sets of 15 of each exercise 5 times a week, as you did in phase 3, you'll be doing 3 sets of 15 of each exercise 5 times a week. You're also going to continue to increase your metabolism by increasing your total weekly aerobic minutes. You will be exercising a minimum of 150 aerobic minutes each week. Then, assuming you want further results, you will add to your weekly aerobic minutes as you feel you're ready. You're also going to begin the process of strength training. Strength training is a key component in the long-term maintenance of a healthy weight and has the added benefit of combating the effects of age. In Phase 4, you'll also begin to fine-tune your eating habits by increasing your choices of healthy foods while decreasing the unhealthy ones that you consume. Finally, you'll make the adjustments that you feel are necessary in order to continue your healthy way of life. And of course, you'll continue to maintain your exercise log and eating journal. And there you have it. First, a question. Why should you train with weights? First of all, strength training maintains the muscles that you already have and keeps them active. Since your muscles are your primary calorie burners, maintaining and keeping them active is a highly effective way to reduce and control excess weight. Weight training strengthens your body and allows it to function at a higher level by making you capable of doing more work. I don't just mean allowing you to lift more weight. Strength training will increase your ability to perform aerobic exercise at higher levels as well, which will further decrease your percentage of body fat. You'll also get the aesthetic benefit of toned muscles. But one of the most important, yet often overlooked benefits of strength training is in the way it combats two of the most profound effects of the aging process, the loss of muscle and the loss of bone mass, or osteoporosis. Strength training is the best way to fight both. The basics of strength training. There are essentially two different muscular qualities that you'll want to improve through strength training: muscular strength and muscular endurance. And while you could focus on either one of these qualities, both of them will be balanced and enhanced with the Get With The Program strength training progression. The essential 8 exercises you'll learn here represent a basic strength training program that can be performed at home or in a health club or spa. They are geared to train all the major muscle groups of your body. Strength training is an entirely different activity than your aerobic workout. Many people make the mistake of trying to make them interchangeable. They're not. They accomplish different goals. Your time spent strength training does not apply towards your weekly aerobic minutes. However, these 2 activities can be performed within the same exercise session. Whether you follow your aerobic workout with your strength training routine or vice versa is entirely up to you, but your strength training routine should follow your functional exercises. There is one similarity between your aerobic workout and your strength training regimen. If you want to show improvement, you must progressively challenge yourself. How effective your strength training regimen is will depend on the number of times a week that you strength train, the number of repetitions or reps that you perform, the amount of resistance or weight that you use, the number of sets that you perform, the types of exercises that you perform, and how aggressively you progress your exercise. Most studies conclude that when you strength train once a week, your muscular strength, for the most part, can be maintained, though your muscular endurance may slightly decline over time. When you strength train twice a week, your muscular strength can gradually be improved, and your muscular endurance can, more or less, be maintained. But when you train 3 times a week, both your muscular strength and your muscular endurance improve significantly. If you train 4 times a week, the rate of improvement increases slightly. The Get With The Program progression starts you strength training 3 times a week in Phase 4, and you simply continue training at this frequency. You'll continue to progress by increasing the amount of weight and the number of sets you perform according to your goals. If you develop a passion for strength training and you're feeling physically and mentally prepared for it, go ahead and increase your weekly workout days to 4. A repetition is one successful completion of a given exercise. To complement your aerobic exercise routine and to enhance both your muscular strength and your muscular endurance, you will do between 8 and 10 repetitions in a set. If the weight you select is challenging, this will be effective in significantly increasing both your muscular strength and your muscular endurance. Selecting the amount of weight that you use for any strength training exercise should take into account your level of fitness as well as what your goals are. To arrive at the proper amount of weight for each exercise, I want you to begin each exercise using a very light weight that you know you can lift. Then increase this weight gradually until you arrive at a weight that makes you fatigued after 8 or 10 repetitions. Once you select the amount of weight that you'll use for each exercise and are ready to begin an exercise, be sure to do a warm-up set prior to performing the actual set. This will minimize the risk of injury. The warm-up should consist of 4 or 5 repetitions using about half the amount of weight that you've selected. Sets are groupings of repetitions of the same exercise performed before you take a brief break. You're going to begin Phase 4 by performing 1 set of 8 different exercises 3 times a week. After about a month, you should consider progressing to 2 sets of each exercise 3 times a week. After another month, you can consider progressing to 3 sets of each exercise 3 times a week. Keep in mind that your progress is completely under your control. If you're not ready to increase the number of sets that you're performing, you don't have to. As always, if you're content with your results, you can stop progressing any aspect of Get With The Program. The essential 8 exercises are described on the mini disc that accompanies this program. Print them out so you'll have the written instructions readily available. These exercises are to be performed with a set of dumbbells. I find this to be the most effective, cost-efficient way to strength train. Plus, a set of dumbbells is relatively easy to store. You may prefer to go to a health club or spa and use the equipment they have available. With a minimum of modification, any equipment they may have can be used to perform the 8 essential exercises and achieve similar results. Ask a qualified exercise professional at your facility to customize 8 exercises that achieve the same goals as the essential 8, if necessary. When performing the Essential 8, make sure to accurately follow the directions. This will not only ensure that you're getting the results that you want, but will ensure your safety as well. And remember, before you start each exercise, don't forget to warm up. How aggressive you are in progressing your strength training program should be based on your ability, your goals, and your level of motivation. Safety should be your primary consideration. There are, however, certain cues that will tell you when you're capable of doing more work. For example, if you're setting your weights properly and working hard, a day or two after you strength train, you'll notice a slight soreness in the muscles that were exercised. This is not only normal, but desired. However, if the soreness is uncomfortable to the point where you don't feel like training on a day you had planned to, the weights that you're using are too heavy and should be lightened. There will come a point when you notice that the same routine, using the same resistance, no longer produces any muscular soreness, and you feel like you could do several more repetitions without a problem. This tells you that it's time to increase the amount of weight that you're using. However, you should increase the weight in the smallest increments possible, typically by 2 or 3 pounds. For example, if you're using a 3-pound dumbbell for a particular exercise, use a 5-pound dumbbell. This is not only to prevent injury, but doing this allows you to see how your body responds to the new weight. Assuming that you want further results and you wish to increase the number of sets that you perform, a general guideline is to work out at least a month using one set. Then, if you have no muscular soreness, add a second set. Then, if after a month or so of doing 2 sets of each exercise, you want to progress further and you have no muscular soreness, add a 3rd set. Now it's time to fine-tune your eating. One of the most common mistakes people make when they attempt to lose weight is radically changing what or how they eat. This usually involves severely limiting the quantity and amount of their food choices. When you do this, you deprive yourself not only of foods that you enjoy, but also frequently the nutrients that are essential for your health. And while you may be able to do this for a while, eventually something's got to give. You'll feel deprived physically or emotionally or both. And one way or another, this spells the end to your diet. I strongly believe that the method of eating that allows you to lose weight in the first place must, more or less, continue for the rest of your life. That is, you must be successful in maintaining that weight for the rest of your life. Otherwise, any weight lost will eventually return. This is why it's so important to have balance, variety, and moderation in the way you eat. In order to do this, you will have to think differently about food. No matter who you are, there are choices that you make right now that are good ones, and there are choices that need to change. What I want you to do is build healthy eating choices around the way you currently eat, while you gradually eliminate unhealthy food choices. It may take a month to make all the necessary adjustments, or it may take a year. It should be accomplished on your timetable. That is how change becomes permanent. Human beings are meant to eat a variety of foods. Severely limiting your food choices is not only boring, it's unhealthy. Your nutritional needs are complex. Your body needs a constant and varied supply of calories, carbohydrates, fats, proteins, vitamins, minerals, fiber, water, and electrolytes in amounts and combinations that even a nutritional biochemist would have a hard time keeping up with. Luckily, we are naturally attracted to foods that have a variety of colors, textures, and tastes. These preferences become especially keen when your body needs a particular nutrient within a particular food. Often, people who have made exercise a part of their life will quite naturally start choosing healthier foods in more reasonable portions while limiting foods that are not helping their efforts. But simply relying on both your intuition and your good intentions doesn't guarantee you that all of your nutritional needs will be met or that you'll be as consistent as you need to be in order for your weight loss results to continue. In order to help you reach and maintain your goals of health and weight loss, there are 4 things you need to do each day. 1. Limit your consumption of fat, especially saturated fat, and bad carbohydrates. 2. Eat 2 servings of fruits. 3. Eat 4 servings of vegetables. And 4. Eat no more than 7 servings from the whole grain group of foods. Calling these guidelines limit 24/7 will help you remember the four things you need to do. Let's first look at limiting fat and bad carbohydrates, two culprits that can have negative effects on both your weight loss efforts and your health. You need some fat in your diet. Fat aids in your digestion, transports cholesterol, creates hormones, increases your immunity to disease, and helps you realize when you're full. But like most things, too much of it causes problems. So how much fat should you consume? I don't know exactly, because everyone is slightly different, and finding out the perfect amount for you takes a little trial and error. Most people need somewhere between 25 and 50 grams each day. Most, if not all, of this fat should be unsaturated or monounsaturated fats, such as olive oil, canola oil, and safflower oil. Most fat that comes from plants tends to be lower in saturated fat than the fat that comes from animals, like butter and lard. Exceptions to this rule are palm and coconut oil, which are from plant sources, but they're saturated and therefore should be avoided. If you have heart disease or another medical condition, if you are pregnant, or you are a lactating woman, be sure to consult your physician before you make any drastic reductions in your food intake. So what's the best way to track and limit your consumption of fat? There are two approaches that I like, and you can pick the one that suits you better. If you like a methodical approach, you could keep a log of your total fat consumption in an average week, then divide this number by 7 to get a daily average. Fat grams are now included on virtually all labels. You could also purchase a fat gram counter at your local bookstore or health food store. Your first goal is to be sure that your daily fat consumption is no more than 50 grams a day. Then, gradually lower the amount of fat that you consume each day, on your own schedule, of course, and give yourself some time to adjust to this new level of fat consumption. Whenever you cut down on anything, your body misses it for a while, especially fat. These cravings should eventually go away. When they subside, you can consider making another reduction. However, if after a month or two of this lower fat intake you find that you're rarely satisfied with your meals, you constantly crave foods that are high in fat, or your skin or hair appears dry, you may have cut back a little too much. Just remember to stay within the 25 to 50 gram range. The other approach I like is more of a common sense approach to reducing the amount of fat that you consume. Simply begin to gradually cut out foods that are high in fat. The chances are you already have a good idea of how to get most of the saturated fat out of your daily eating, and the following recommendations will give you some new ones. This method is certainly not as structured as the first, but it works quite well for many people. Again, if after the initial adjustment to consuming less fat you find that you're not satisfied with your meals, you constantly crave foods that are high in fat, or your skin or hair appears dry, you may have cut back a little too much. Pick whichever method is right for you and start getting leaner and healthier today. By making just a few adjustments in your behavior, you can drastically reduce the amount of fat that you consume. There's a place you can go that can completely change the way you eat. It's your grocery store. Simply don't put unhealthy, high-fat items in your grocery cart. Choose cooking oils such as olive oil or canola oil. Choose lean cuts of meat and poultry. Ignore fatty choices such as bacon, high-fat sausages, brisket, spare ribs, duck, goose, or the fatty cuts of beef. Stay away from the highly processed lunch meat such as bologna, salami, corned beef, ham, and pastrami. Choose low-fat or non-fat milk and low-fat cheeses. Load up on fresh fruits and vegetables. Much of the fat that we consume comes from the way that we prepare our meals. Broil, roast, bake, poach, or steam instead of frying. Use oil sprays as opposed to using butter or pouring too much oil in a pan. Many dishes can be prepared without fat or oil. After a little adjustment, you'll notice that more of the natural flavor of the food comes through when you use less fat. You'll be surprised how much fat you can get rid of just by preparing your meals differently. When you prepare meat or poultry, trim off all the visible fat. Eat lots of fish. Choose snapper, tuna, mahi-mahi, sole, salmon, monkfish, trout, cod, or bass, and occasionally mackerel, red salmon, and sardines. When you buy canned tuna, be sure it's packed in water, not oil. Avoid fried foods. Eventually, you'll even be turned off by too much grease. There's a lot of fat hidden in traditional salad dressings. Choose balsamic vinegar, or balsamic vinegar mixed with a little olive oil, or buy one of the many low-fat salad dressings that are available. Find low-fat alternatives to gravy and cream sauces, such as tomato or potato-based sauces. Skim or low-fat milk can be used as a substitute for cream, and low-fat yogurt makes a great substitute for sour cream. Desserts can be a source of a considerable amount of fat. Have an arsenal of healthy alternatives for those times you want a little something sweet after your meal. Fruit, sorbet, ice milk, angel food cake, and fresh berries are all satisfying but low-fat finishes to a meal. Toss out potato chips and high-fat treats in favor of pretzels, low-fat soup, or even a baked potato without the butter or sour cream. Air pop popcorn is good, but hold the butter. Restaurants won't be as careful as you are about the way your food is prepared. You can almost always bet your meal is loaded with unnecessary fat. Try to limit the amount of times you eat out. When you do eat out, pick a restaurant that has some low-fat dishes. Don't be afraid to order off the menu. A good restaurant will want to cater to your needs. Now let's talk about sugar. We eat too much sugar. I know I'm guilty, but I got wise and I eat less sugar today than I did a year ago, and much less than I did 10 years ago. I've gotten much healthier for it, and so will you. Sugar not only makes you overweight, it contributes to your risk of diabetes, heart disease, and many types of cancer. So let's look for ways to get the sugar and other bad carbohydrates out. There are carbohydrates that are good for you, and there are those that aren't. All carbohydrates are really made up of combinations of simple sugars. The simple sugars are glucose, or blood sugar, fructose, and galactose. When you combine two simple sugars, you get a double sugar, or a disaccharide. For example, when you combine glucose and galactose, you get the double sugar lactose, which is the sugar found in milk. When you combine glucose with another glucose, you get the double sugar maltose, which is found in beer. When you combine glucose with fructose, you get sucrose. Table honey and brown sugar are both sucrose. Sucrose is one of the bad carbohydrates and a primary one that we want out of our diet. When you combine a whole bunch of simple sugars in complex combinations, you get polysaccharides. When a polysaccharide comes from a plant source, it consists of either cellulose or starch. Just think of cellulose as the scientific way to say fiber. As you probably know, fiber is good for you, so you want a lot of this in your diet. The best sources of fiber are in vegetables, especially green leafy vegetables and fruits. Legumes and whole grain products are also good sources. Finally, there's starch. Starch is found in some of our favorite foods, such as potatoes, pasta, beans, and rice. Starch has gotten a bad rap through the years. When I was growing up, I can remember people who were on a particular diet saying things like, "Oh, I can't have any of that. It's got a lot of starch in it." Or, "Whoa, that potato is loaded with starch." And while it's true that too much starch will cause you to gain weight, it's really an important part of a balanced diet. So besides sucrose, what else is a bad carbohydrate? When grains are processed or refined, they're stripped of much of their nutritional value. They become more or less empty calories, which we want to avoid. White bread, white rice, white flour, and many pastas are in this category. What you want are whole grain breads, whole grain cereals, brown or whole grain rice, and whole grain pastas. These products may be harder to find and a bit more expensive, but hey, your health is well worth it. Time now to consider fruits and vegetables. I know while growing up you always heard that you should eat an apple a day, but here I'm asking you to eat at least two. I guess that's inflation for you. Eating two servings of fruit each day is one of the healthiest things you can do, and it's also one of the easiest. Fruits come in all shapes, sizes, tastes, and textures. You'll never get bored, so get on board. Fruits are nutrient-rich foods. They contain water, vitamins, fiber, and minerals. But I do want you to keep in mind that fruits contain the sugar fructose and can contain a fair amount of calories. Two servings of a fruit a day is perfect. Eating more than 3 servings of fruit a day is not necessary and only winds up contributing to excess calories. Your 2 fruits a day will nicely complement the nutritional value that you get from eating your vegetables. When it comes to nutrition, nothing beats vegetables. They're loaded with vitamins, minerals, water, and fiber, and they fill you up. Their contribution to both your health and weight loss efforts can't be questioned. Just be sure to get in your 4 a day, even 5 if you want, and let them go to work for you. Even though you can count canned and frozen vegetables towards your vegetable quota, fresh veggies are a far better choice and worth the little bit of extra effort. Now for grains. You could, if you want to, refer to this group as the whole grain group, since your best food choices are whole grains, including whole grain breads, cereals, rice, and pastas. Technically, any product containing flour, such as cookies, cakes, pastries, and pies, could be considered part of this group. But you know these products need to be limited or eliminated from your diet. And since they don't positively contribute to your nutritional needs, making them one of your 7 daily choices robs you of nutrition. When you do allow yourself one of these indulgences, don't count them in your grain quota. Simply consider it an occasional treat. Just don't treat yourself too frequently. Pretzels are considered to be in the grain group. They make a great snack, especially the ones that contain no fat and that are made with whole wheat flour. Here are a few grain recommendations. 1. Try to limit your bread servings to 3 or less a day. If you have a sandwich, it counts as 2 servings of bread. 2. Gradually start replacing processed grains with whole grains, one product at a time. Choose oatmeal over cream of wheat, whole wheat pasta over pasta made with white flour, kasha, barley, or brown rice over white rice. You can even find whole wheat couscous. 3. When you go out to eat, don't allow the bread basket to sit on the table. If you want bread, simply ask the person waiting on you to bring you a slice or a roll with your meal. It's a good idea to keep a record of your eating when you first begin to follow the Limit 24/7 eating guideline. Remember that you do not have to be perfect in your eating, just consistent. Consistently good, that is. Here again are those 4 guidelines. 1. Limit your consumption of fat, especially saturated fat, and bad carbohydrates. 2. Eat 2 servings of fruit. 3. Eat 4 servings of vegetables. 4. Eat no more than 7 servings from the whole grain group of foods. Your weekly goal in Phase 4 is to meet all 4 of the Limit 24/7 guidelines, a minimum of 5 times per week. One last time, let's review the goals of Phase 4. 1. Water, 9 glasses each day. 2. Functional exercises, 3 sets of 15, 5 times per week. 3. Weekly aerobic minutes, a minimum of 150 minutes per week. 4. Strength training, essential 8 exercises, 3 times per week. 1 set to start, progressing to 3 sets based on your goals. 5. Limit your consumption of alcohol. 6. Limit or eliminate your emotional eating. 7. Institute the Limit 24/7 guideline of eating, a minimum of 5 times a week. Recommended time at Phase 4? The rest of your life. I'd like to leave you with some advice. It comes from years of observing many people take this journey to improve the quality of their lives. Caring for yourself is a daily process. Each day of your life, you wake up and make the choice to either elevate yourself, stay just as you are, or slide backwards in every area of your life. There's no question that you're going to have good days and not so good days, but what's important are the choices you consistently make. This dictates whether your momentum is in reverse or moving positively in the direction of your goals. We need to remember that we create ourselves by the choices we make. And while each of us has been blessed with our own strengths and weaknesses, what we create with what we have is what is ultimately meaningful.
Get with the program. Getting real about your weight, health, and Emotional Well-Being was written and read by Bob Green. It was adapted for audio by Jesse Boggs. The recording engineer was Dave Summers at Master Tracks in Santa Barbara, California, with editing and post-production by Robin Wise. The associate producer was Sarah Ginsburg. Get with the program. Getting Real About Your Weight, Health, and Emotional Well-Being was produced and directed by Jesse Boggs. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Get with the program. Getting Real About Your Weight, Health, and Emotional Well-Being is available in hardcover from Simon & Schuster.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.